Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm talking about the danger of change. I'm going to recap some information on what it means to have a cover story, what it means to put qualities of your own undercover, what the growing edge is, and what happens when you want to go off the growing edge into new behavior. I'm also playing an interview I did with David Brunetti, whose book, Acting Songs, and whose entire career as a coach is about helping actors act the songs they have to do in musicals. So, hang on. Here come the show. Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about finding, discovering, uncovering, recovering who we really are, and then becoming it. If you've been listening, you know that as a psychotherapist for more than 30 years, it's my experience, actually both clinical and personal, that most of us are pretending to be less than we are. The person that we demonstrate, present to the world, while that is true of us, it's not the whole truth about us. And that most of us are keeping secrets about who we are and what we can do, the skills, capacities, abilities, creativities, inventions that are actually true of us. We're keeping those a secret. Not only from the rest of the world, but from ourselves as well. That most of us unfortunately learned very early in our lives, before we had words, many of us, that some of the things that were true of us, some of our impulses, our ways of being, our natural reflexes, didn't work in the family. That they brought well, anything from criticism or neglect or shame or even punishment. And so we figured out ways to hide those parts of ourselves. And we got so good at it that we forgot we had those parts. And so now we live in this world with less of ourselves, less access to important parts of ourselves. And what comes up in therapy a lot is that it is precisely these denied parts of ourselves that we need to do what we need to do later in life. And we think we have to develop it or find it or learn it. Usually that's not true. Usually all we have to do is recover it. I was going to say discover it, but it's in us, right? Uncover it. Now that's not easy. Because first of all, we've spent, well, I don't know, 20, 30, 50 years pretending that wasn't true. So quite often we don't believe in it. But more to the point, there was a very good reason why we denied it. When I talk about the part of ourselves that we actually do present, I call it our cover story. You know, like a spy has a cover story that it presents so that it is safe, so that the real person that it is not discovered, and then there'll be a crisis. Well, I think it's the same for us, that we created a cover story in order to be safe, usually in our family of origin. And the difference between us and the spy is that we forgot that it's a cover story. When the spy comes home, it can stop pretending to be that other person, but we bring that home with us. And the reason that we created this cover story was that there was some danger attached to acting in these ways that we have learned to deny. So we hid those other things underground. And when we look for them, try to recover them, we're going to run right back into the danger we anticipated when we hid it in the first place. Not that the danger is actually there, although in some cases it, actually in many cases it still is, but our fear of the danger is certainly there, whether the actual danger exists in the present or not. And so our unconscious resists our attempts to recover those parts of ourselves, saying to us, whoa, watch out, danger. You know, like the television show, danger, Will Robinson. That's what our unconscious says to us. And we aren't even aware of it. But we will hear from ourselves, oh, I don't want to do that, or I don't feel like it, or I'm too tired, or it's too much trouble, or what am I thinking, or that kind of stuff that stops us. So today, I want to continue to talk about the danger. I have been talking about it. In the show, usually, I spend the first part of the show talking about why we have so much trouble recovering ourselves. And then in the second part of the show, I play an interview that I did with an artist, part of my Anatomy of an Artist series. I interview people who make their living or their life with their art. I do that because, at least in their work, these people are people who are actually who they really are. Because you can't really be an artist in this culture unless you can't help it. And if you've been listening to any of the interviews, you hear people saying over and over again, if you can be discouraged, get discouraged, because it's a hard life. So the only people who actually do it are those people who really are it. And you can hear it in all the interviews. But first, I'm going to talk about some of the dangers of recovering those parts of yourself, parts which you may badly need, because it's important to recognize that that is what you may confront, the danger, when you begin to try and get it back, so that you're not surprised and you don't think there's something wrong with you and you don't criticize yourself and you don't make it harder on yourself when you run into the resistance, because it's really there. So, I want to talk about the growing edge. Can you imagine that you're standing on a huge plot of land that ends in a cliff that seems to drop off into nothing? And even when you're standing on the very tippy-tip edge of the plateau, you can't see what is below. The land represents your life up until the present moment. It contains all the things that you've done and all the consequences of all the things you've done. Below are the things you have not yet done, the changes you may want to make, the recapturing and demonstrating of those qualities which you had hidden under cover. And of course, the consequences of recovering those hidden parts. The cliff stands between you and what waits below. The growing edge, the place past which you have not yet ventured. Whenever you do something you haven't done before, you must leap off the growing edge into an unknown future danger. Whenever you do something you haven't done before, of course, in this case, I'm talking about recovering an important part of yourself, but it could be anything like wearing heels for the first time, cooking for your mother-in-law, traveling in a foreign country, learning a foreign language, trying to operate a computer. Anything you haven't done before confronts you with unknown dangers, what I'm calling future dangers. Of course, because they're things you do in the future. When you find yourself near the edge, it's normal to be afraid. Because when you leap off the growing edge, you really cannot know if you'll land on a pillow or a bed of nails. Until your unconscious knows that you can survive the risk, you will not be able to jump off the growing edge. We cannot force ourselves off a growing edge into a future danger. Sometimes life will force us off the growing edge, confront us with things we could not control. But you can't make yourself confront a future danger, which is to say, you cannot make yourself recover a quality or an ability, a skill, a way of being that you have hidden until your unconscious is certain that whatever the consequence, even if it's your worst catastrophic expectation, and if you were listening several weeks ago, I talked about catastrophic expectations. And if you weren't listening and you're curious, you can go up on my website and click on the podcast that talks about catastrophic expectations. Even if you confront your worst catastrophic expectation, you will be able to survive it. It will not devastate you. It is when your unconscious says, you can take this risk. You may have to confront your worst catastrophic expectation. It may turn out to be a bed of nails, but it won't destroy you. You may not like it, but it won't destroy you. It is when your unconscious knows that for sure that you can take the risk. So, if you are saying to yourself, wow, I need this quality, the quality of being assertive, let's say. Let's say you've had a life in which you've been shy and you haven't been able to confront people when they have treated you badly or ask for things you want, and you know that you need to have the capacity of being assertive in your own interests. And again, I'm going to refer to something I talked about, well, a long time ago, when I talked about the family pie. That is, if you did your family pie and you found the quality of assertiveness in some other part of the pie. Someone else in your family can really do assertiveness? Well, then, so can you. But you have hidden the quality of assertiveness undercover. And you almost certainly had a very, very good reason for doing that. Probably the person who had assertiveness shut you down because that was the quality assigned to them. And again, all of this information exists in the podcasts that are up on my website. So if I'm talking about a concept you want to hear more about, you can go to my website, which I realize now I have not given you. It is thelynshow.com. thelynshow.com. Don't leave the E out of the Lynn or you'll get a different website. And all of this information is in my book, which is called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. And you can get that by going up on the website as well. Okay, so let's say you did your family pie, you found assertiveness in someone else's pie piece. You believe me that you also contain the capacity for assertiveness, but you have hidden it undercover because when you demonstrated your assertiveness, you had a reaction that made you believe that it was dangerous for you to do it, so you hid it undercover. Now, let's say you believe me about all of this, and you really want that assertiveness back. Let's say you really need it. You're being treated unkindly by somebody, or you need to stand up for yourself at work, or, well, you know, there are more reasons than I can recount here for needing assertiveness. And so you want to recover it. And you begin to think about how you can be assertive, what assertiveness looks like, where you would need it, and you want to try and do it. But you gear yourself up for it, and then you find all kinds of reasons to resist it, to not do it. Well, you know, this isn't the right time, and that person is, you know, not feeling well, and I'm not feeling well, and, I don't have to tell you. Again, we all know the excuses that our unconscious gives us. Don't be angry at yourself. Understand that your unconscious is saying, not yet. It's not safe enough yet. But you can continue to work on making it safe. And I will talk more about that in the coming weeks. Next time I'm going to talk about past dangers, which really I alluded to quite a lot in this. It'll be a little bit of a recap of what I've already said. And again, you can get ahead of me if you like by getting the book. Anyway, I think that's all I'm going to talk about, recovering yourself and the danger that you're likely to confront when you do attempt to recover yourself. By the way, if you go up on the website, you can also email me and ask me any questions that you like. And you know, I rarely say this anymore, but I'm still in private practice, but my entire practice is on the telephone. So if you want to talk to me, you can go up on the website, thelynshow.com, and email me and tell me you want to talk to me, and I'll email you back. Okay, so now, as promised, I'm going to air an interview I did with David Brunetti. David is a perfect example of someone whose life and living have been made with his art. Lucky little David's family was given a piano when he was 5 years old, and David discovered his, affinity for, talent with, ability to make music. And in one way or another, he has been making music ever since. Now, currently, he's put together all of the things that he's learned over the years as a player, as a singer, as an actor, and become a coach primarily, although not exclusively, and you'll hear him talk about that, to actors who need to perform music. It's a different skill, and a skill that David is able to help them hone. And one of the places he does that is at the Oslo Conservatory in Sarasota, Florida. And one of the reasons I'm playing this interview now is to let you know that on Friday, December 10th, there's a fundraiser for the conservatory in which David will be demonstrating his skill. And so I'm hoping that anybody who's listening and is even close to Sarasota will call the FST Conservatory at the Oslo Theater in Sarasota, Florida, and buy a ticket and come down and see David work his magic. But you can hear some of that magic coming up right now. I'm going to be playing a public service announcement, and right after that will be David Brunetti.
Is Mommy going to be here, Grandma?
I'm sure she'll be here, sweetheart. She's not picking up.
She can't be doing this again. She already missed her birthday dinner. She can't miss the first recital.
Do you think our daughter is drinking again?
Missed holidays, skipped milestones. Problem drinking hurts families and friends, but there's help and hope. Al-Anon family groups are for anyone troubled by someone else's drinking. Whether you're a grandparent, parent, spouse, or partner, before you can help the problem drinker, you need to help yourself first. For an Al-Anon family group meeting in your community, call 1-888-4-ALANON. That's 1-888-425-2666. Online, visit www.alanonfamilygroups.org. A message from Al-Anon Family Groups.
I'm here with David Brunetti in his studio in Manhattan. Yep. And I'm talking to David at this time anyway, because he's about to conduct a workshop in Sarasota, mm-hmm. a fundraiser where... You want to explain it?
Yeah, I come down every year mm-hmm. and teach the master's degree acting students. They're getting their MFAs in acting at Florida State University, and they do it in Sarasota in conjunction with the Oslo Theater.
Right.
Now, it's not a musical theater program, but they want them to have some experience and some taste, at least, of what it's like to work in a musical, work in the musical theater world, just to open their options up, you know, when they go out into the big cold world and try to be professional actors. Because
right.
there's a lot more, if you can do musicals, there's more options, obviously.
Right.
So they bring me down. I go down every year for a week, and I teach for a week. And the workshop is called Acting Songs. And what we've done for the last number of years is the last day that I'm there, we basically open up the class and have a presentation of the students working on songs that I've worked on them with, whatever those right words are there.
Right. many W words. Right.
So the last day they present their songs with acting included.
And people are invited, and it's a fundraiser.
This year it's a fundraiser.
Yes, and it's a fundraiser. So we're promoting it, and it's December 10th.
So it's in the evening on Friday. So what we're going to do is we're going to open up the last class. When they come on Saturday morning, we'll have a presentation, sort of. We call it an open class, but they don't really get to see me teach at that. The students just get up one after the other and sing their songs.
Right.
What we're adding this year, is the final night I'm teaching. We're going to say, you can come in and watch me teach the students. So it's just me interact and see how I get from them, what I get from them. So that's the new thing.
So you haven't done that before?
That's never been open to the public.
Okay, all right. So this is open to the public. Come and see how it's done.
Yeah, see how I teach people how to act songs.
Yes. I imagine that'll be really interesting for a lot of people. So many people in Sarasota are interested in the arts anyway.
Yeah.
And if you're near Sarasota or you're planning on a holiday in Florida, this would be a good time to come.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be a blast. It's really fun and exciting and emotional and wonderful.
I'm sure that it is. I would like you to talk more about it, but before we do, I always ask the same question of the people that I interview. Since you have already admitted to being a person who has spent his life in an art, and that art is apparently music.
Mm-hmm. Music and theater.
Music and theater. Mm-hmm. I always ask the same question, and that is, how did it happen to you? How did it start? How did it find you, or you find it?
Well, when I was 5 years old, somebody gave my family a piano that some church was throwing out in Pittsburgh. I have 8 brothers and sisters, so there were already 4 or 5 of us by then.
And where are you in the...
I'm the third oldest. I'm the oldest boy. I'm the oldest of 3 boys. I have 6 sisters and 2 brothers.
Wow. Okay, so here you are at 5.
Here I am at 5 in Pittsburgh in our little lower middle class house, and somebody gave us a piano.
Hmm?
And I just had musical talent, and I just, you know, without even thinking about it, I would just go sit at the piano and pick out tunes, and it was clear that I was musical. And I must add, all my siblings are musical. But I went to the piano. I sort of made that my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was in 4th grade, I started lessons. Before that, I played by ear. And I played a lot of stuff by ear. But we, at that time, they decided to send them to a teacher. So I went to a nice lady up the street who lives in Sarasota. She moved to Sarasota.
Oh,
her name
really?
Is Joan Siegel.
Oh,
so I get to see my first piano teacher when I get down. We have dinner every year.
Oh,
isn't that sweet?
That is lovely. That is.
So she was the lady up the street.
Wow.
I took piano lessons from her when I was 9 years old in Pittsburgh.
Wow.
In the 19th century. And now she lives in Sarasota, retired to Sarasota.
Uh-huh.
So it's so sweet. Oh, boy, the karma, you know, it's just no accidents.
Yeah.
So I played the piano all during my upbringing. And I also wanted to act. So I would do TV commercials in Pittsburgh. And
How old when you started doing that?
10 or 11.
Really?
Yeah.
Did your parents take you to auditions, or you, how did you...
My father was in advertising. He was an art director for an advertising agency, so he had sort of contact with people that would make commercials and stuff like that. And so that was sort of a natural, you know, adjunct to what I was doing. And I went to college at Carnegie Mellon. I started as a piano major, but I really wanted to act more than anything. So I switched, after a couple of years of that, to the acting program at Carnegie Mellon, which was a great acting program. And I pause at this point and just say, I just knew from the time I was a kid what I wanted to do. And it turned into theater. It could have turned into some other branch of music, I suppose, but it turned into theater because when I went to high school in Pittsburgh, my Catholic all-boys high school, when I was a freshman in high school, the drama director there had heard about me as a piano player from one of the grade schools.
Oh.
And they were always looking for piano players for their musicals, so he grabbed me by the arm and pulled me into the auditorium and said, you're going to play the piano for our musicals.
Wow.
And then I started playing in summer stock musicals right away in high school. I would, you know, go out and get jobs. I was working already.
I was just going to say, you started working when you were 10. You've been working all your life.
I started actually, working, sort of really getting paid for it as a freshman in high school, because that summer I went into summer stock and musical direct shows and played the piano for shows. So I did all that. And I would sometimes act also, you know, and that kind of stuff. So I switched to acting at Carnegie Mellon, and I studied with the master acting teacher at the time, was a man named John Ulmer, who ended up being the artistic director of the Oslo.
Uh-huh.
So after I left college and John went down to Florida, he started bringing me down there. I moved to New York after college,
mm-hmm.
to be in the theater here,
right.
Whatever I would do in the theater. And I ended up being an actor for about 10 years, alternating with musicals work.
Stage?
Stage work, yeah. Stage, I mean, I would do, what I wanted to be was Al Pacino. That's the career I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I could not find my way into it.
No.
And so I worked really hard. I had an agent, and I did some, I was a standby on Broadway and off Broadway. I did stuff off, as an actor off Broadway. But I kept getting cast as sort of musical stuff and stuff. I wanted to do more dramatic stuff, and I just couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't find my way into it.
They didn't see you.
They didn't see
me
that way. And the musical work as a pianist and musical director, that came to me knocking at my
door. Right.
I mean, I was working on Broadway as an assistant conductor in my 20s, you know, and I wasn't even looking for it. I sort of would go, oh, all right. It was confusing because I would be in New York auditioning, and I'd walk into a room and they'd say, oh, we know you, you're a musical director. And I'd say, well, no, today I'm an actor. So it was like split personality. It was kind of crazy. Then when I hit 30, it just sort of evolved. I evolved out of the acting stuff. But I had so much acting training and so much musical training that I was made to be a coach.
Yeah.
You know, I was just, because I know what acting is.
You'd already trained to train, right?
Yeah,
right.
In both ways. And the thing that I came up with was how to bring acting to songs.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a puzzlement to me when I came to New York. I knew how to act a lot because I had a really great training at Carnegie Mellon, and I took more acting training here, as everybody does generally when you come here, you just get into acting class. And I got into as good acting classes here. And I was auditioning and all that stuff. But when I would get to songs, I would feel like I didn't know what I was doing, because it was the additional elements that the song calls for. It wasn't simply acting a scene.
Right.
Or a monologue.
No, you have to sing.
You have to sing while you're while you're acting.
Right.
And so it was very hard for me to do that, as it is for a lot of people.
The opposite is true for me.
You can act when you sing and not act. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Did you grow up singing?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did.
I've seen this. People have come to me who only sing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they do a scene or do a monologue, they're not as alive. The music throws you into a place of bigger expression.
Yes. If it does for
you.
That's right. That's right. If you're connected to it. That's exactly right.
Right.
So primarily what you're trying to do is help act, is to do the opposite of what I'm trying to do.
I have people from every angle.
Mm-hmm.
I have people who I have opera singers.
Ah.
I have pop and rock singers who have never done any acting in their life.
Yeah. Oh.
And I have straight actors, people who have never done any musicals in their work. I have people from every possible
right,
angle.
So you can cross them.
Yeah.
Right?
Because
right.
The process that I work with when is the same no matter who I'm working with. So I sort of came up with a series of
I was just going to say
steps.
You developed it, right?
I developed a process
mm-hmm.
that's a step-by-step technique to bring acting to the songs.
Yeah.
That's what I didn't have when I got to New York.
So how did you get it?
I had a teacher named Hal Holden who had some of it,
mm-hmm.
and I used a lot of what John Ulmer had taught me about acting and just a lot of my own sort of experimentation and work as an actor myself.
Mm-hmm.
I would go, oh, I had a lot of like light bulbs would start to go off. You could do it like this,
mm-hmm.
you could do it like this, you could do this, this is how to bring this to life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I do it, now I do it in New York, I coach singers privately in New York. And I do lots of different things with singers, too. So luckily I stay real busy.
So do you teach voice as well?
I don't teach people how to produce the sound.
Okay, right.
That's what a voice teacher does.
Right,
a vocal
right.
coach is more is almost always a pianist.
Mm-hmm.
So the services I offer when people come to me are I help people find material.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very good at finding repertoire for people, and they're always looking for songs for auditions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big thing in New York, you know. Because I remember going to coaches when I was an actor in New York, and I'd go to coaches and they'd say, I don't have anything to do with finding repertoire, I'm just going to help you. Or somebody else would say, I'm good at finding repertoire, but I'm not good at coaching. So I do all of it.
Wow.
So I help people find songs. If they get roles, I help them learn the music, if they need to just learn the notes,
right.
that kind of a thing. And I do acting coaching. People do get all or some or part of whatever they want from me, you know, I'm willing to do it. Some people come to me just for the acting
mm-hmm.
technique. And they'll say, I don't know how to audition. I don't know what to do when I go into an audition. And I can show them just the nuts and bolts of how to do that.
So were you doing this? Did John Ulmer know that you were doing this and that's
yes.
why he asked you to come down?
Well, he would ask me to come down initially as a musical director.
Ah.
Because he was directing musicals. Once a year we usually do a music. He would usually do a musical, and I would come down and musical direct the show, and he said, you should teach a class. You should teach the students while you're here. And I thought, I would have no idea what are you talking about? I wasn't trained to teach.
So again, this came to you.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was just pulled into a room. I was pulled into a room when I was a freshman in high school to play music, to play the piano for musicals.
Right.
And John Ulmer pulled me into a room at the Oslo and said, teach.
Teach.
So when I first go down this early couple of years, I would just do one day or 2 days that and just sort of talk to them about the process that I was developing at the time. I was just coming up with it too.
Yeah. Well, and this sort of coalesced it for you, right? That
yeah.
You could, and it gave you a place to develop it.
It gave me the
right,
place to develop right. it, like no, like nothing
right,
else.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. It's,
and it actually, you had to develop it for it.
Yeah.
What else were you going to
yeah.
do?
And eventually, I wrote a book. Because I looked around at the books that were mm-hmm. around, because I like having it written out,
mm-hmm.
you know, in other areas of technique and stuff like that. But I couldn't find a book that talked about what I was doing. They all confused me or talked about approaches that I didn't like,
mm-hmm.
external approaches. And mine is more an internal, organic acting approach. So people said to me, you should just write it. And I thought,
so
right.
what's it called?
It's called Acting Songs.
Of course.
That's the name of my website too, actingsongs.com.
Uh-huh. Right.
So I did all this stuff over the years to get a website, and I wrote the book and got it published. And the book has been great for me. It's gotten me working. I work in Europe every year several times.
Wow.
Sweden and Denmark. I've taught in London. I have a regular job in Denmark that I go to this year I'm going three times. There's a school called the Danish Musical Academy. It's like a college for people that want to be in musical theater.
So how did they get the book?
So crazy. A student of mine in New York said to me, a friend of mine is visiting from Sweden. This is in the late 90s. A friend of mine is visiting from Sweden, he runs a musical school over there. Could he come watch a lesson? I said, sure. He came and watched a lesson. He said, would you come to Sweden and teach? So I went to teach. I didn't have the book written yet. But I taught there for a few years, and I was writing the book, and I showed him a manuscript. One of those kids got a hold of the manuscript in Sweden. That school closed, but they sent the manuscript to the guy who was opening a school in Denmark, the Danish Musical Academy. It was all just people passing it along.
It's all the same thing. It's all the same thing for you. It just comes to you.
Yeah.
And you say, no, I want to be over here. And life says, no, over here. And you say, no, I want to be over here. And life says, no, over here.
Finally, I say, okay.
And you say, okay, right.
Oh, it's true. It's true. Because, I mean, the whole Scandinavia and stuff, I was like, you've got to be, this is insane. I thought, okay, what the hell?
What the hell?
So exactly I went. Right. And now I've taught for the Danish Actors Union. The Actors Union brings me over. So it's all the kinds of things in Denmark and Sweden. And I have students from all over Europe, really. People come from London, because I taught a class in London, and I've musical directed a show in London. So I have people that know me there, and teachers that I've worked with teach there now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's great.
So you finally said yes.
Yeah.
To yourself, essentially.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
To who you are. Right.
I mean, it's all been in the same world. It's been the world of the performing arts.
Right. Well, it's actually all been in theater, more or
theater
less.
Theater and musical
right.
theater,
right.
sure.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. And it's been great. And I mean, you know, I've done a lot of, I've played on television. I've done a lot of piano work. You know, do you remember Vicki Lawrence?
Of course.
She had a talk show for a while, and mm-hmm. like a morning talk show.
Yeah.
And I was the pianist.
I would
sit on the set and play, and that. So I've had lots of fun, fantastic,
yeah, my
crazy
God.
Jobs, you know.
Well, I was going to ask if there's anything else you'd want to do, but it seems to me that life has offered you all kinds
of... The only thing I want to do that I haven't done is write a screenplay that gets produced.
I was just going to ask if you wanted to write.
Yeah.
Because you write.
I like writing.
Yeah.
And I've written three...
And how interesting. A screenplay, not a stage play.
I've written several musicals.
Oh.
One of them got produced in Sarasota, actually. We workshopped it at Flora Studio Theater.
Really?
And it was done at the Golden Apple produced it.
When?
In the 90s.
Early?
What was it called? It was called Servant of Two Masters. Although that was the play that it was based on. There was a classic farce called Servant of Two Masters by Goldoni. We called it... Double. I can't remember my own musical. We called it Double. John Ulmer and I wrote it together. Mm-hmm. And I wrote that, and I wrote another musical. I wrote several musicals, it was similar to the acting thing. I could not break into that world.
Yeah, it's not.
Or I didn't have the energy that it took to do that. And I had a couple of friends that were in the movie business. One friend, a guy named David O. Russell, who writes music. He has a new movie coming out, actually, in December called Fighter. Starring Mark Wahlberg, and he directed Three Kings, George Clooney movie,
mm-hmm.
and Flirting with Disaster, and I Heart Huckabees. He's a movie director and writer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I watched him get started, and I went and become successful, and I went, oh, that would be fun. Because I love movies, and I love storytelling, and so that's what I'm doing, writing screenplays.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you know, who knows if I can...
Yes, I know. It doesn't matter. It will... Life will decide.
Yes, it's just like it always has.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But it's a wonderful life.
I'm so lucky. When I was a teenager, my father hated his job. And it was... He didn't hide that fact.
No.
He did not like going to work. He didn't like his work. He always wanted to be an actor.
Oh, my God.
And I said to myself, that is not going to be... my story.
Right.
I'm not going to do something I didn't want, that I ended up not wanting to do just to make money, which is what he did. And he retired. He's 83 now. When he retired in his mid-60s, he became an actor in Pittsburgh. He's been in lots of shows in Pittsburgh. He's been on television and movies and commercials. But I wasn't going to wait until I was 65 to do it.
When my dad retired, he became a stand-up singer.
Is that true?
Uh-huh. It's absolutely true. He came to me and he said, I need an 8x10 glossary.
That's great. I love that.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to be 60. I didn't.
No,
want to
I don't know. No, I don't. I'm not. I made the same choice that you did.
Did you?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, but it's just interesting to me because I don't think a lot of people did what our parents did.
Right.
You know, I mean, a lot of people did what they did with their lives, which is they did the thing to make money that they either didn't like or but felt they had to do.
Yes.
But very few did what your father and my father did.
Held on to their dream.
Right, and then said, okay, fine, now, you know.
Now I think that's really to do it.
So,
I love my work. I mean, I feel...
Well, it's clear. It's very, very clear.
I finish my day, and I walk away from the studio, and I go, God, that was fun.
Yeah.
I can't believe I got paid for doing that. It is so much fun to do what I do. I feel so lucky, because I don't think most people like their work so much.
No, I think that's true. And I also think that you have another advantage, and that is that not only are you having fun, but you're doing so much good. I mean, it's all giving. It's all...
Yeah.
Enhancing other people's lives.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
And I tell you, you know what I think for me the most valuable thing that I do, the thing that I hold the most, I place in the most valuable spot, is help people be alive.
Yes.
Because that's what the acting is about. It's about being alive emotionally, alive to your insides and expressing it outside.
Yes.
You know, not pretending to be alive, but really being alive, being in touch with who you really are. That's what the great artists do. I mean, that's what Frank Sinatra did. That's what Judy Garland did. That's what... Bernadette Peters does. That's what any great artist, performing artist does.
It's funny. When you asked me earlier what I do on the show, and I said one of the things I do is interview people who make their living or their life with an art, but the reason I do that is because actually the theme of the show is discovering and recovering who you really are.
Yeah.
And I interview people who make their living or their life with an art because in this culture, in order to do that, it has to be who you really are.
Yeah.
Because it's too hard to do if it isn't who you really are.
They used to say, if you don't need to do this career,
don't do it.
Don't
do it, exactly. And so when people hear people like you, it's easy to see that you are who you really are. You're not, there's no dissembling here or pretending that you are this guy.
Right.
This is who you are. And it's my hope that when people listen, people who are in denial for aspects of themselves.
Yeah, to be their authentic self.
Exactly, exactly. So you and I are doing the same thing.
Follow your bliss, as Joseph Campbell said.
Mm-hmm.
You must know Julia Cameron's artist's way.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. And there are a lot of ways.
But
one of the ways is to hear, to be in the presence of, to experience what it sounds like when somebody is really who they really are.
Yeah.
You know?
I
because
agree.
The thing that I think you were alluding to before about your father is true for most people. And that they aren't who they really are.
Right. They do something they feel they should do rather than what they
exactly.
What their heart
and so then they lost. keep the most alive part of themselves. Right?
Ouch, right.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So, in a way you and I are doing the same thing.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I mean you could be a heart surgeon and be an artist. I mean, so
of course,
speak, you know.
Yes, of course.
If that's who you,
if that's your passion.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. But, I mean, I know a doctor who's a wonderful physician and a very successful physician who really wanted to be a lawyer.
Wow.
Right. So I mean, it's not.
It's insane. It's so
you know,
funny.
It's really. I mean, you know, he's the younger brother. There were two brothers. And his father was desperate for one of them to be a doctor, and the older one couldn't cut it, so the younger one became a doctor.
Wow.
Right. And so, I mean, it doesn't matter if you have a high-class profession. That doesn't necessarily mean you're being who you are.
Right.
You know?
Right, right,
I mean, clearly
right,
you
right.
can be, but it doesn't follow as, you know,
right.
the night follows the day, that just because you're doing something that's high profile or that other people admire or that you're making a lot of money, that
it's
you are...
It's so true.
Yeah.
It is so true.
Yeah. So so people could come and work with you. People could come and work with you even if they're not in theater, couldn't they?
Sure. I work with a lot of people that aren't professionals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just to do this.
Yeah.
Just to get in touch with their real self. You know, just to express themselves.
Yeah. A guy was in earlier today and we just were saying, hey, welcome your soul. Bring your soul to life today. He said, yes, yes, my soul. He's a tour guide in New York.
Yeah.
But he's talented. He sings.
Yeah.
And he needs to sing.
And he needs to sing. Yeah.
Or you turn into a swamp inside. If you're a singer, you need to sing.
It's the truth. And it's something that people who don't have that really don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't understand why people would work for free. You know, why you would work showcase clubs.
You don't do it. You wouldn't understand why people
No, you
do
really
it.
Don't. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it.
Yeah, it's like bringing your, like if you were a bird and it's the time you fly.
That's,
you know,
correct.
It's really true.
I think that's right. I've not thought of it in quite that way, but I think that's right. Because fish gotta swim, birds gotta fly,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is when they are the most themselves.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. So what you do actually is to help people become the most themselves.
Yes. That's what I aim to do.
It's very lovely. So I usually ask, having lived an entire life really dedicated to this art, would you just think for a second and see if there's anything you want to say about what it's like to have dedicated a whole life to this kind of art, this kind of work?
Well, I mean, it's everything we just said. I can't imagine. I wouldn't be myself.
Yes.
If I hadn't done this, I am so glad that I was brave. Because it took courage, because some people discouraged me.
Tell me a little of that.
There were teachers in high school and people in my family who said this will never last, who said this is a dream, a pipe dream. It's not practical.
Was this your father or everybody or a lot of people or some?
My father was not... He was a little bit down on it.
Well, I mean, it's understandable, isn't it? I mean, he made that choice.
He had made that choice, and I guess it would, you know...
And he must have made that choice because he didn't believe he could have it.
Yeah, right. It was a whole, you know, he was born in the Depression. I mean, it was a whole other generation.
Well, but so he...
And his imagination didn't let him really see that I could do that. And he wasn't horrendous about it. But, I think it would have been easier. I wish he'd been more exuberant about... me going after it.
Yes.
You know, and as I said, there were other people too, other members of my family, some of my siblings. And
you think there was a little jealousy there?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And that's why I said it took courage for me.
I think it does. And that is why I say that people who do what you did, do it because it is who they are. You can't buck that unless it's who you really are.
And I had been around enough people that were doing it. Like you said, How powerful it is to be around somebody who's really who's on fire.
Yes, yes.
And I had been around some people who were on fire, and it inspired me. And they were my role models.
Yeah.
And I said, they can do it. I've got in me what I see. I relate to that. It's a reflection of something in me. I'm gonna bring myself.
So again, you were
alive.
Very fortunate.
Yeah.
I mean that whoever those people were came into your life.
Yeah.
Right. But I really want to make that point again and again that. Being an artist in this culture is difficult. And your family is not the only one who said, oh, that's very cute, David, play the piano, but what do you think you're talking about with a life, you know?
Yeah, and there is a way to do it. If you want to do it, you can do it. And I'm also very big on sort of deeper approaches to it than just coaching and learning external technique. Like I'm very into doing affirmations and having a vision for your life. And, you know, working on it spiritually, that kind of thing. I have a woman, she's a middle-aged woman. She had when she was very young, in her early 20s, she had a career going as a performer. She sang at Radio City Music Hall. She was in the national tour of Fiddler on the Roof in her early 20s. But she got married very young, started having children, had a couple of kids, and with her husband, had a business. And she would sing a little bit over the years, but basically dropped out. She dropped out of the business for 20 or 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she's gotten back into the business in the last 5 or so years. She still has a wonderful voice. And I coach her, and I have her doing all kinds of affirmative visualization and talking about it and, you know, writing it down and putting it on her mirror and saying things every day about, you know, I'm having a fabulous career as a performer where I make lots of money and people, and I love what I'm doing, whatever it is, you know, that kind of stuff. And I say, you got to do this every day, particularly when you don't want to.
Right.
You got to really do this every day because there's part of you that is fighting this.
Right.
You got to bring her out of the shadows, and love her, and help her to free her.
Yeah.
And she has an agent and a manager now, and she's getting commercials. She sang at Michael Feinstein's place over there. She had a night performing over there. We did a show. I mean, she's like, it's like amazing.
She found herself again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it took courage in her life. There's a lot of people telling her she just stop
it. I was just going to say,
there are people that think she's ridiculous.
Yes.
I say, you're not ridiculous. You're alive, and it scares people.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That is exactly right.
Because they're not as alive as you are.
Yeah. And I know that even when you can find yourself, that doesn't mean that you have the courage to express that in the face of what other people will, how other people who have not found themselves will try and take it away from you.
Yeah, because it threatens something.
Yes, I think that's
painful
right.
Painful for them to see
that. So that's another great gift that you give, the support against the criticism, against the whatever it is that's coming down on them. And because you know how that feels, you know what it takes.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
What I say over and over again is what you're saying. What I say over and over again is to people is be yourself. When I'm walking into an audition, I'm outside an audition with somebody, I'm going to go in and play for them or something, or before a performance, before a cabaret show or a stage show, to a cast, I say, be yourselves. That's what is most moving to people. Be yourself. That's what you have to give.
Yes.
That's the only thing you have that's unique. Nobody's you. Show the people who you are. It will move them. It will be compelling to them. Don't try to be something you're not. That's cliche.
Yes, and it's false, and everyone knows it.
Yes, everyone knows it.
They don't necessarily know it in their head, but they feel it.
Right. It lacks energy.
That's right. And it distances you from them instead of pulling you in.
Yeah.
It's not
vulnerable.
No, that's right. And vulnerability is what captivates.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's great, David. It's great.
Yeah, when you're vulnerable in front of other people, it melts their hearts.
Yes, of course. And it's rare.
Yeah.
And that may
world,
be why.
It's a brutal life. It's a brutal world.
Yeah.
That's one of the paradoxes of this career of being in show business is you got to have a huge heart and a huge vulnerability, and you got to be tough as a bear to withstand the constant judgment and rejection.
A lot of which is already coming from you because
because
of what other people have told you. So you've internalized it, and you can do it to yourself. Never mind, they don't do it to you. Yeah. So it's great. I think coach is not really a large enough title for you, I mean,
I'm a coach on a lot of different things.
Yes, maybe that's right. It's just, right, that's right. That's great. So anything else you want to say about living this life?
Not really. I'm just, like I said, I'm glad I had it in me or learned how to be brave, to be myself, and let people disagree with me and not want me to do it and said, I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah.
And it's a gift.
It's a gift. That's a great place to stop. Thank you, David.
Indeed, that was a perfect place for me to stop this interview. Because, without meaning to, of course, David makes the point of this show. That being yourself, your whole self, who you really are, not who they told you have to be, who they told you are, who you think they want you to be, who anybody else is, and all the things that go into making us who we're pretending to be in this world. But being who you really are, it's not easy. It takes, as David said, great heart, and as a bear. But as he also says, it is a great gift. There is nothing like living the life you are meant to live. Your life. In psychology, we call that congruence. That who you are and what you do are the same. So I want to thank David very much for making the point. Of course, as I say over and over again, this is the reason that I interview people like David, people who make their living or their life with an art. Because in one way or another, they all say something like this, because, of course, they all know it. They know how lucky they are to have been able to be themselves in this world. They know what a gift that is. And it's the gift I'm trying to give you. And so if you were listening at the beginning of the show and you heard all that stuff about going off the growing edge and enduring your worst catastrophic expectation, the difference between the cover story you invented and the real you, this is all of a piece for me. I need to tell you that this is the gospel according to Lynn. You don't have to believe me. This is what I believe. This is what I have seen to be true. But if it doesn't work for you, that's okay with me. I'm not married to everybody believing what I believe. Anyway, one thing I certainly believe, and which I hope that you too will believe, is that Josh Hackney is the guy when it comes to anything web, internet, recording, electronics, any of that. He is the guy. He is the guy who makes it possible for me to do this show because I didn't know anything when I started to do this. I didn't know how to record it. I didn't know how to edit it. I didn't know how to upload anything. I didn't know. So Josh, he showed me everything, and when I forget how to do it, he either does it for me or he reminds me. And maybe some of you have some sympathy for that forget how to do it thing. Well, maybe you don't. But if you do, then you also want Josh. And you can get him by going up on my website, the same way you can get me. Oh, and you know, I said at the beginning when I was opening the show, but I want to say again, come down and see David work at the Oslo Conservatory fundraiser on December 10th. Call the Oslo Theater in Sarasota, Florida. Say, I want to see David work, and I want to contribute to the wonderful work they do at the conservatory. Or go up on my website and ask how you can do that, and I will tell you. And the website, thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow. So, as always, I hope that you heard something you can use today. Something that you didn't know, something you did know but had forgotten, something that amused you, intrigued you, something that will bring you back, because I will be here next week, same time, same station. And you know, I hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Always in my face. And figure I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I'll slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get, I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet, 'cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flag, no, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper, I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang, so...